Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Thursday to you. I'm back, much to the chagrin of most of Jacksonville, Florida. Mike Dempsey here with Fat Tony. Tony, you can hear me. I'm battling early today.
Yeah, I can tell. Something that happened in New York?
I think this is airplane voice is what this is. You know, because I was good. I did radio shows up in New York. I did some TV up in New York. And I was strong. And then, you know how it is sometimes. You're in a couple of planes full of who knows what kind of carriers of what, including myself. I never know. I could be spreading germs to everyone else, too. But I just have this, you know, it's a combination of hotel room air and airplane air. That's getting me today. I'm going to fight through.
Yep.
And I'm going to tough it out here on Jaguars Today. Did you miss me? I certainly missed you guys.
I don't know if miss is the right word.
I think that's a big fat no.
Not really.
That's an understandable one. You hush your mouth, Tyler Devitt. All right. I got to check out the SiriusXM studios when I was up in New York. Let's just put it this way. We have to go through. We've got to have a security code to get in the gate here, right? And we come into the lobby. We either have to enter the code again to get back to the business area or be buzzed through, right? Wow. That's simple, all right? To get into where the SiriusXM studios are, it was I felt like I was in Fort Knox, kind of. First of all, your name had to be on the list when you walked into the lobby. The lobby, there's nothing in the lobby. The lobby is like the size of a football field. There's one little desk in the entire lobby. And you go in there, and if your name's on the list, they say, okay, where are you going? You're going to the 36th floor. That's where your thing is. Okay, so they give you a card, a little printed out card, that you have to punch into the turnstile so it allows you to go through. And then it tells you which elevator you must go to. And that elevator will only go to your floor. You can't push a button. It will just take you to your floor. And then you get, you know, greeted by another round of security when you get up there. Then you got to get past the guy at the front desk and
jeez,
get there. Yeah, I mean, but as I walked in, I looked to my right. There's the Howard Stern studio. And just across the hall from him is where SiriusXM Fantasy is. So it's just kind of cool to get a little bit of a picture on what was going down in that regard. But I had a good time. I always have a good time up in New York, man. You probably saw me tweet out or retweet out. I think it was Alex Reithmiller. Not a PR guy. He's an information guy for CBS Sports. We get emails from Alex Reithmiller all the time, you know, just various, you know, sports factotums and different people that are available to come on the radio shows and whatnot. But I found it fascinating that the Fantasy Sports Trade Association, according to their numbers, and I mean, I guess they would know as well as anybody, basically claim that fantasy sports participation in, this is basically North America, this is the United States and Canada, has gone from a little over 30 million people in 2010 to over 56 million people right now in 2015.
Goodness.
Nearly doubling in the last 5 years. I mean, we are, and it's crazy, and there are a lot of people in the industry wondering, you know, is this a giant bubble that's going to burst? But, boy, I talked to some of the folks at FanDuel. And remember we saw the story in Monday Morning Quarterback not too long ago where they're doing the countdown of the 100 most influential figures in the NFL for 2015. And the founder of FanDuel, Nigel Eccles, estimated that they would do about $1 billion in revenue this year, which means they would net about $500 million when it was all said and done. And I've been told that is a wildly conservative estimate. That FanDuel,
that's crazy.
FanDuel's underestimating what they're going to do because at the end of the year, it's probably always better to underestimate and outperform expectations. But, I mean, not
was
only
that,
them.
Was that football or was it?
That's fantasy sports.
Fantasy sports.
But football represents 80% of fantasy sports.
No, I know it does. But it's just like in the last 5 years, that's when you've seen the rise of these weekly leagues.
Weekly and daily fantasy is the by far what's driving the growth of it.
Yeah. And it's spots like FanDuel that are kind of driving that growth right now in the fantasy industry. And I don't know that that's going to slow down. I mean, anyone who's participated in those, especially guys like us that have been doing, you know, dynasty leagues and yearly leagues for a very long time, the opportunity to do a weekly league where I get to basically draft my own team every week.
Every week.
And that's the most fun part of the fantasy season, besides winning a championship. The most fun part about the whole thing is drafting your own team, picking your own guys, and putting whatever your knowledge is out there. And to be able to do it every week, they've basically given you that addiction on a week-to-week basis right now with what they're doing with these daily and weekly fantasy football games. It's crazy.
Look, I love the fantasy stuff. I think I'm pretty good at it. I can talk about it and I can analyze it, but the level that some of these organizations and some of these guys take it to is absurd. I mean, the math that they put into it, the algorithm, yeah. It was just like washing over my head, particularly with baseball. It's pretty impressive. There are a lot of guys out there with good info that can help you win a lot of money right now if you're playing fantasy sports. So it's cool to see a little bit behind the industry and what's going on, and really see basically everybody, all the writers that you would follow, all the broadcasters that you would follow were on hand talking about all the different things going on. The fascinating thing is with the NBA. You've got Adam Silver basically coming out saying, hey, we're for legalized gambling. We think it's going to help our sport. There's a growing sense that there's a push for that he may be one of the people that opens that conversation up on a more widespread basis. But, for right now, people are getting, their enjoyment through fantasy sports in that regard to have some action on the game or not for that matter. I can't tell you how many fantasy leagues I play in. The action is just competing and having fun, but for a lot of people, the idea, like you said, put in a couple bucks tonight and walk out with several hundred tomorrow, depending on how your players perform at any one given block of time, is really driving the boom in the industry right now. We got a lot going on for you today. Hopefully the voice has got 2 hours in it, but we're going to bring in Leon Washington. He's going to join us, one of Jacksonville's favorite sons, Tony, going back. My first show that I had in Jacksonville was a high school football show, which was nothing like the one you do now. What would you say? You have 15 to 20 coaches call in on any given Friday night?
We get a bunch of coaches. I mean, it's probably a minimum of 10 that we get on a weekly basis, but it's probably between 10 and 15.
I had a minimum of zero calling me, and usually a max of 1 to 2. In any given week, they would call in and give us a score, and I would pray that they would stay on the line with me for a good 10 minutes, because you just didn't have the access to that kind of information. All the coverage on the websites now, back then, I used to go to the Fox 30 website, and occasionally by 10 o'clock, you'd start to get a couple of scores trickling in on that. Now the information gets out there, and with Twitter, it's much more readily available. But back in the day, when I did that show, the first year I did that show, I think I did it for a couple seasons, Leon Washington was going on to be named Mr. Football at Andrew Jackson High for the state of Florida. It was dynamic. I mean, he played in the secondary, returned kicks, punts, obviously an outstanding running back, did it all. Went both ways with playmaker anytime he got the ball in his hands, and was a fun kid to watch. And then we got a chance to meet him back then and see what a nice young man he was, and kind of follow him in his career, which up through last season has him playing 9 years so far in the National Football League. He's got a
career.
It's a phenomenal career. He's the all-time leader, tied with Josh Cribbs, for most kickoff return touchdowns in National Football League history, with 8. That's pretty significant. And he's got a foundation here in Jacksonville, in part in Jacksonville, that's helping underprivileged kids. We'll tell you all about that. But he's going to join us basically at the top of the next hour, and we'll get into everything going on with him. In fact, he's got some pretty cool goings on over the course of the next few days, including a free football camp, free football clinic for kids. He's got a poker night on Friday that we've got tickets to give away to, and we'll do that throughout the course of the show today if you'd like to get some. He's got a meet and greet going on this afternoon if you want to get some autographs. We'll give you details on that coming up as well in just a little bit. If you want to get in today, 641-1010 is the number. As always, it also is the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. And, of course, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well, where the question of the day has been posted. And this is in honor of Leon Washington. We ask you today, who is your favorite all-time Jacksonville-born athlete? Not necessarily someone who played for Jacksonville, although we saw a guy like Rasheen Mathis go to Englewood High School and then go right down the road to Bethune-Cookman,
yep,
star in college, and come back home in almost a fairy tale athletic life for Rasheen. So certainly if you want to go the Jaguar angle, there are options to go that way. But, you know, whomever it is, it doesn't have to be a Jacksonville Jaguar. Who's your favorite Jacksonville-born athlete? We'll talk about that throughout the course of the show as well. Leon, by the way, will be at the Chick-fil-A in the River City Marketplace from 5 to 7 o'clock today. No admission. You don't have to buy anything. You can just show up, meet Leon, shake his hand, get an autograph, get a picture, whatever the case may be. And am I interested, Tony, to see. He played 16 games. He's on the roster for 16 games at the Tennessee Titans,
yeah,
last year. Will he, does he still have interest in playing, and what are the options going forward here? And he's also a guy who was in Seattle right before they hit it big.
Right.
Right, they were just starting to hit it big.
He was there for the comeback against the Atlanta Falcons, and then
right,
and then the bad kick that led to Matt Ryan and the Falcons finally getting that playoff win. He was there for that.
He was there for that. They were on the brink. Next year they'd go to the Super Bowl, and Leon was watching from afar as it was Percy Harvin taking a second half kickoff back to the house for, you know what, could have been Leon. And you could definitely have seen that with his prolific nature in that regard, making plays as a kickoff returner in the National Football League. So we'll talk to him coming up. We'll also get into this story that came out yesterday with the commissioner, the new commissioner of the SEC, indicating that he thinks, you know, ultimately college football could go the way of the NBA in terms of guys declaring for the draft, maybe not ending their eligibility on the spot, and maybe opening it up for those guys to come back. We'll talk about the pros and cons of that with draft early entrants returning to college football becoming a possibility. At least if it gets floated out by the Southeastern Conference, you have to pay attention to it because
sure,
they have the most clout in college football still, despite the fact that they didn't win the championship this year, didn't bring it home for what would have been, what, the would have been 8 and 9 years had they gotten it done. So a couple years without a title, and but they're making news with the new commission. We'll talk about that as well. If you want to get in, 641-1010, as you know, is the phone number. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today, just getting started. We're live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, here we go, Jaguars today. I see the voice starts kind of strong. Gonna fade a little bit. What you can't do, Tony, you can't be the guy who goes out of town for 3 days,
yeah,
and comes back and takes the day off because your voice is right there.
No, you don't want to be that guy.
I kind of want to be that guy. Probably shouldn't be that guy. Instead, I'll make everybody else suffer by listening in to the gravelly voice today. Greg Sankey. How many people would know that Greg Sankey is the new SEC commissioner? Probably a good number, but not clearly not everybody. I didn't know what this guy's name was. Of course, we don't follow the, at least I don't follow the college game, the ins and outs of it. I watch the game. We don't have to talk about it on a regular basis anymore, at least on this program, maybe on Fat Tuesdays.
Yeah,
such.
Monday and Tuesday I talk a little college football.
But Greg Sankey's the new SEC commissioner and said yesterday that college football could follow college basketball's path. I'm reading from the Matt Hayes article at sportingnews.com. Into allowing players to return after declaring for the draft. And on Wednesday, the NCAA Men's Basketball Oversight Committee proposed a rule that allowed players to return to school after declaring for the NBA draft. A similar concept, writes Hayes, which will need assistance from the NFL, could be part of a greater push towards a more player-friendly NCAA. I frankly am not that concerned about it being a more player-friendly NCAA in that regard. I honestly think the amount of players who do this and don't get drafted is so small that I don't understand what the big push is. And I get the fact that you want to give these guys a chance to come back and, A, help your team. That's first and foremost. All this highfalutin talk about, you know, let's help these young men, these student athletes. I don't buy it. I don't think a lot of people buy it, quite frankly. And quite frankly, I think a lot of the fringe guys who come out are the kind of guys who aren't cut out for school or don't have a whole lot of interest in school anyway.
Probably, yeah.
Everybody understands, Tony, if you're a first or second round pick and you declare, or you're a projected first or second round pick and you declare and you want to make some serious money, get some, you know, if you're a first round pick, top 15 picks now get fully guaranteed contracts, even if you fail, all right? You know, your choice. You want to go back to school, you can go back to school. And now the NCAA is allowing guys to finish out their scholarships to come back after their playing careers and get their education if they choose to. And that's up to them, whether they choose to or not. If you play 10 years in the league, you got all the money you need. I don't know if you need the assistance to go finish your education. But the idea would be to have an early kind of combine just for underclassmen declarees, guys who may be on the fence. Guys like Dante Fowler wouldn't have participated in that. He was a projected top 10 pick pretty much all the way. So he wouldn't need to go to something like this. But my question is this. When are you going to do this? When are these guys training for this combine? Because that's what it's all about, right? It's not just you come out of the season, hey, who's got the fastest 40 time? These guys are training for weeks and months to really hone their technique to run a 40-yard dash, most important race they'll ever run in their athletic lives, most of them. And they rarely would ever use that technique in a real football game. Those numbers don't necessarily translate, but that's what it's become. How quick can you do it under this set of circumstances? So if you're going to get ready for this combine, you're going to be working out all the time. When are these guys going to be in class? Are they going to be able to maintain their eligibility? When exactly do you think you're going to be able to pull this off? You're not going to do it during the NFL playoffs. Nobody in the playoffs is going to show up to this. The teams would want to be there to evaluate these guys themselves. What is the NFL advisory board for? Isn't that what the NFL advisory board does? These guys can put their name in as an underclassman. The NFL will advise them, hey, we project you based on, you know, our contacts around the league as being a third-round pick, mid-round pick, late-round pick, undrafted free agent, whatever. And then you take your chances based on that information. The thing I find funny is what do we hear from the NFL side of things all during draft season, we call it, as the lead-up to the draft, that it's the tape that matters. The combine's just a bunch of guys running around in shorts. Well, then wait a minute. Why would the NFL advisory board's recommendation, which is based on nothing but what the tape shows, that's all they can go on, be less important than some makeshift combine late in the month of January for these guys? It goes to show you that maybe the combine numbers are more important than they like to admit, that they are fascinated by the 40 times and the bench press and all these different athletic feats that these guys can do, and that despite their protestations to the contrary, they do factor that in pretty heavily. I don't know. To me, it seems like such an insignificant thing. Maybe not insignificant for the 20 or so guys who may go undrafted, but like I said, I don't know if those guys are cut out for college football anyway, or college life, academic life, because I think a lot of them are just trying to get out of going to class and are going to be happy to take any money, NFL minimum salary if they can get it.
Well, I know, look, this kind of a farce that is the student athlete anyway, right? I mean, and that's what this whole process to me kind of points out again, is this farce of the student athlete. Because like you said, when are they going to be working out? When are they making time to do that? If they're getting ready for an NFL draft, they're certainly not focusing on whatever's going on with school during that entire period of time. If you're a junior who declares that you're going to go into the NFL draft and then you're going to go to a combine that is basically the SEC combine, and then you're going to go play or get ready for an NFL combine, hopefully if you can get invited to that, and then you're going to be preparing for an NFL draft, and then if you don't get drafted there now, after that 5-month process or whatever, now it's time, let me re-switch my focus completely to going back to school and going to college for one more year at whatever school I was at. I don't get why they need all of that. If you want to allow kids who are juniors who declare for the NFL draft and they go undrafted and they look at the prospects they have assigning with whoever in the NFL and they decide, I'd rather just go back to school for 1 year and see if I can improve my stock enough to get drafted next year. If they want to take that route, I'm fine with that rule being in place, but it is kind of making a mockery a little bit of this entire idea of the student athlete. It is absolutely putting up front, athlete is the most important part of that. Because if we're going to let them declare for the NFL draft and then completely not focus on anything that's going on that campus for all those months and then say, yeah, come on back in and play football for us for one more year, I think you've made your bed with that one a little bit.
Right. It's going to be a greater benefit to the teams in a lot of cases than it would be to the player. Although I don't think they're suggesting let them go through the whole process, let the draft take place, and then return. That's almost undoable. You'd have to do this almost, you'd have to do it before National Signing Day.
Well, you'd have to have the combine before National Signing Day.
You'd have to have the combine and then your assessment given, and then your decision would be made. You'd have to withdraw from the draft before the draft ever took place, my understanding of this.
I thought the whole thing was prefaced on the idea of, so they're just going to expand the window of when you can make the decision?
Basically.
Is their deal?
They would, according to Sankey, according to the story by Matt Hayes, they would like the league to conduct some kind of combine just for underclassmen declarees. If you wanted to go and get a further assessment, again, guys like Dante Fowler, this might not apply to him, okay?
Yeah.
So you get the fringe guy, says, hey, I want to go work out and do this thing, put me through my paces. They give you an evaluation. They say you're a fifth-round pick. Well, maybe that's not good enough for me. I'm going to go back to school, okay? Well, you're going to have to do that before National Signing Day unless you change the NCAA rules, which I suppose you could to accommodate these exceptions, but there's an 85-player limit. You bring in all these guys, you sign all these guys, all of a sudden you've got a guy who wants to come back that you didn't account for, and now you've got to, what, gray shirt somebody, you've got to mess with somebody else's football future necessarily. They couldn't allow them to go through the draft. Here's one reason they couldn't allow them to go through a draft. I think what would happen is you would see when you got to the seventh round, instead of maybe targeting that underclassman declaree as a priority free agent, you'd be more inclined to spend the seventh round pick on him. Because the idea would be only if you go undrafted would you be able to go back in. There's so many loopholes to this thing. And where it sounds good on the surface, I just think putting it in to practical reality is unrealistic unless I see a lot more details with this. Again, I think NFL players want to assess these guys with their own eyes, and if you want to get a true assessment, and by the way, does it benefit teams to give you a true assessment on where these guys are going to go? It benefits teams to have as many underclassmen declare as possible. Now, you could argue it benefits teams to have as many players as possible that are fully prepared for the National Football League, but to give yourself another 80 options a year. Keep in mind, we're not talking about 80 players. Even if 80 players declare, not 80 guys would pull their name out of the NFL draft. You might be talking about a handful of guys doing this every year. So for a handful of guys, are they going to conduct what? Some kind of combine with 12 players that our team's going to show up to this? Or who's going to do the evaluations? Are they just going to have someone with the NFL run this and then post the numbers and say, based on these numbers and these measurables, this is where we'd expect you to get drafted, combined, I guess, with your film, which, again, to me, flies in the face of all these NFL guys saying that the film is really the only important thing out there. If this one...
I don't know about only important thing, the most important thing.
I'm
not saying that the evaluation of these players doesn't change when they go to the combine.
It does.
It changes when they go to the combine, but you hear guys after they work out, we got to go back and watch the tape. And the complaint every year is, why didn't you watch their tape? I thought you had already watched the tape.
Right, you watched the tape, and now because...
Don't you want to know, like, you want your opinion to be informed by the tape, and then, oh, he is the athlete we thought we saw on tape, or he's a crazy good athlete in workouts. Why isn't this showing up on tape when you're sitting there watching them do whatever they do at the combine?
Yeah.
At least I would think so. And this is kind of the same deal. I don't see what this helps all that much. You know, I don't see what it helps all that much, because I go back to the idea that most of the guys that are juniors that are going to be declaring for the draft that are kind of fringe prospects anyway, to me, in my own head, I'm thinking they're just kind of done with school.
A lot of them are.
Right. They just want to get on to whatever their career is going to be in the National Football League, hopefully, in the future. And I'm looking at the list. I couldn't find a complete list of undrafted guys in the NFL this year. But I found a list that Gil Brandt put together that has probably a couple hundred names on it of the premier undrafted free agents coming out of the draft this year. There's very few of them that are from the SEC. And the handful of them from the SEC I found, most of them were seniors. So it doesn't even apply to these types of guys that are going to be in that kind of range coming out of the draft anyway.
Well, I get on the surface you could argue, okay, if this guy could find out, hey, we think you're going to be an undrafted free agent type guy, and this guy really thought, man, I thought I'd at least be a mid-round pick, there might be a handful of guys that said, you know what, I'm going to go back, I'm going to play another year of college football, maybe this is the last football I'll ever play, maybe I'll improve my draft stock. And it probably would benefit a tiny handful of guys. I don't know if the NFL is going to get on board with a major initiative that benefits a tiny handful of guys that has to me, ultimately, at best, just a fringe impact on the league itself.
Sure.
Maybe they'd want to do it to keep, you know, kind of in the good graces of their free minor league system, the college system out there, because that's basically what it is as far as the NFL is concerned. It's a free minor league system, and they do have to accommodate them to some degree if they want to continue to get the kind of access that they get now on college campuses. But I don't know. I think it's ultimately going to be much ado about nothing, and I'd be very surprised if they could pull, with the calendar the way it is, with National Signing Day where it's placed, and the NFL's not moving up their draft into January right after the Super Bowl. For one reason, they just like the idea of spreading it out 12 months out of the year. And if anything, they backed it up a couple of weeks last year. They moved it up a week this year, but it's not going to be drastically earlier than it is right now, because then they'd have to come up with something else to fill the all-season sports calendar.
Yeah.
You know, right now they've got it pretty much wired, with the exception of about the next 5 weeks, which makes me think my voice might get really bad tomorrow, and I'm going to take a 5 week hiatus.
Which is why I think the Tom Brady thing is going to play out over the course of the next 4 to 5 weeks.
Do they want that dominating the headlines?
I don't think they care. It already has for 5 months. I mean, it already has for 5 months. I don't think they care. Look, the SEC is, they're more flush with cash than they ever have been in the history of that conference, with the SEC network coming on and the success that these schools have had. I mean, they're handing out checks to these schools, that money that has never been inside the conference. So if they're trying to come up with different ideas and ways that they can potentially help, even if it is just a handful of kids, I get why they're exploring some of these ideas. And there may be other conferences who quite simply can't offer those kind of opportunities to kids, right? Like, there may not be an opportunity if you're going to go play in the Mountain West to have that combine when everything is said and done, so that you can make your decision and it be a more informed one in the SEC. That would be something else they can offer. It's like, look, we are going to have this opportunity for you. If you think you're good enough to go play in the league, we'll give you a better idea of whether or not you really are, so that you can make the most informed decision possible. And I can see where that would even be a small one, but a recruiting tool for the conference when everything is said and done, because they are flush with cash right now, especially in football.
Well, if the SEC does it, everyone's going to do it. This has got to be an NCAA-wide kind of thing. I don't think it's just going to be the SEC that allows guys to get back in. No other conference is going to let them have that kind of recruiting advantage if they can help. And again, because how many guys is it really going to impact on your team? Now, maybe what you'd have happen is you would have more guys actually declare for the draft just to participate in this combine-type setting. Then my question, what happens if they get hurt there? You know,
right.
Is your scholarship protected? Is this under the NCAA umbrella? Is this acceptable? You know, what happens to you if you do get hurt? What happens to your football career as you participate in this kind of thing? I think you'd actually have more guys declaring who are on the fringe, and ultimately maybe you'd have more guys leave in some circumstances, but Michigan or, you know, Wisconsin or any of these schools is not going to say, well, wow, Georgia and Florida can go around telling kids, hey, come to the SEC, and one of the benefits is, you know what, you can declare for the draft early, and if you don't like where it looks like you're going to go, you can come back and play for us. You can't get that in the Big Ten. You can't get that in the Pac-12. I don't see that happening, so I think it's going to be NCAA-wide, or it's not going to happen at all, and my guess is it's not going to happen if it happens for a long, long time. All right, coming up, we're going to move up the state in football history and the Honda Drive around the NFL, as we've got Leon Washington, one of the favorite sons of the city of Jacksonville, joining us at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. So stick around for that coming up, and also stick around to find out how you can get tickets to Leon's poker night for the Leon Washington Foundation coming up tomorrow. We'll have a pair for you available coming up in just a few minutes. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. First, a sad note, this date in 1992, Jerome Brown, defensive tackle of the Philadelphia Eagles at the time, formerly a Miami Hurricane, and once a Cane, always a Cane, died in a car crash at the age of 27, Tony. He was a dominant player on a really good Philadelphia front line in the late 80s and early 90s, that included, of course, Reggie White, the Minister of Defense, playing there as well. And 29 and a half sacks in five seasons for Jerome Brown. But it wasn't just the sack numbers that put up. He was an impact defender against the run as well. And passed away in a car accident on this date in football history. Happier tidings. Happy birthday, we wish, 37 years young, to Marcus Stroud of your Jacksonville Jaguars, born on this date in Thomasville, Georgia in 1978. Stroud here playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars as a three-time Pro Bowler and one of the best defensive linemen that certainly we've seen in team history, pairing with John Henderson to make a lot of memories. And coincidentally enough, the exact same sack total as Jerome Brown, 29 and a half sacks, but he coming from strictly the defensive tackle position after a lengthy career here in Jacksonville. Spent the final 3 years of his National Football League career in Buffalo with the Bills, where he only missed three games in his final three seasons. So pretty durable overall as well. Big baby Marcus Stroud, happy birthday. That is this date in football history. It's brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. And you can visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. Donna Murphy requested that I mention this date in non-football history, that Tony Geary will no longer play Luke on General Hospital, which is Donna Murphy's favorite soap opera of all time. And in fact, we often bonded when she produced the program of mine for 4 years about the wedding of Luke and Laura. Go back, Jeannie France is still one of the most beautiful television actresses of all time. Donna sent me a link to a picture of them, the royal wedding of Luke and Laura from many years ago. So there you have it. That one's for Donna Murphy. That is this date in football and non-football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Free agent cornerback Antoine Kaysen.
Kaysen
had surgery on his foot yesterday to repair what he called an ongoing issue. Kaysen started 12 games for the Carolina Panthers last season before he was released by the team and spent the rest of the year in a reserve role with the Baltimore Ravens before being released. He will miss the entire 2015 season after the surgery. He is 28 years old. And it's difficult to tell how serious this next story is, but it's an interesting one anyway. 53-year-old Herschel Walker said last week that because of the specialization of the running back position in today's National Football League, he believes he could still play in the league in some role. Atlanta Falcons head coach Dan Quinn, appearing at a Buckhead Business Associated meeting in the Atlanta area, said that the Falcons could use Walker and that he was one of Quinn's all-time favorite players. Via D. Orlando Ledbetter, who's a friend of the program, in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the quote, "Yeah, we have room for him. He definitely fit in great from a competitive standpoint." Walker, obviously a very popular athlete in the Atlanta area, as he may still be everyone's favorite all-time Georgia Bulldog. In case you were wondering, George Blanda is the oldest to have ever played in the NFL at the age of 48. Blanda, although he did attempt three passes in his final year in the league, was listed exclusively as a kicker for the last 9 years of his career, but he threw a bunch of passes, especially early in those 9 years. Like I said, 48 years old. Walker is 53 and wants to play running back, potentially. There is
Here's a world of difference there. Start with Herschel. Let's get all these fringe draftable underclassmen prospects, and let's put Herschel in the combine with these guys first,
right,
and see if you survive that, Herschel. Okay? You're not playing in the National Football League. That's Dan Quinn saying that, like Gus Bradley saying, "Oh, of course, who wouldn't want to have Emmitt Smith? We'd have room for Emmitt Smith. He's the all-time leading rusher in the National Football League. He's a high-character guy. We'd love to have Emmitt Smith. We'd find room for him with the Jacksonville Jaguars if he wanted to pander to the local college fan base. Come on! Herschel Walker's not playing in the National Football League. I don't doubt for a second he's one of the most fit, what is he, 53 now?
53.
Probably one of the most fit 53-year-olds. Every time you see Herschel, Tony, you're just like, wow, this guy looks, he looks 20-something.
He really does.
I'm sorry. In underneath the skin, the tendons, the muscles, they are still 53 years old. Okay, Herschel, you're not playing. Tony, I remember this story. I want to say, didn't he try to come back when he was like 40, something like that? And he played a long time in the National Football
League. I feel like there was a story like that.
There was some, I mean, because apparently he said something about this last year. I don't remember him saying it when he was 52 years old. But I remember him vaguely being in his early 40s and either attempting a comeback or expressing a desire to come back. And at the time then, everyone's like, come on, man. You know, I mean, you're great at what you did. And he really was. He, boy, if he wasn't the all-time leader, he's one of the top all-time total yardage guys in the National Football League when you included returns, kickoff returns, which he was pretty prolific at, running the ball, obviously catching the ball out of the backfield for Herschel Walker, and spent, you know, the first few years of his pro career with the New Jersey Generals of the USFL, or he'd have even bigger totals in the National Football League. Herschel's not coming back. Dan Quinn does not have a spot for him on the Falcons. Although, I wonder, does that in some way an indictment of what they've seen from Tevin Coleman? Because we all know Tyler Devitt, they'd grow him soft up there in Indiana, right, with those Hoosiers. So I wonder.
Herschel did say that he ran a 40. The last 40 he was clocked in was last year. He said he ran a 4.35.
I don't believe it.
At 52 years old, he said he ran a 4.35.
What was, remember when, why am I drawing a blank? The Washington Redskins cornerback, Daryl Green.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Had the Daryl, and I couldn't get the Green. He ran, on his 40th birthday, didn't he run something around like a 4.440? Remember that? He just did a thing where he went out there and ran it and timed it. I remember that being on Twitter. Daryl Green, though, for years, was the fastest guy in the National Football League. Now, Herschel was fast. Herschel was a sprinter. I want to say he was like a 60-yard guy. I don't know if he did. He might have done hurdles as well, but he was an NCAA sprinter.
I found the story about it. At 50 years old.
At 50.
To celebrate his 50th birthday, Green ran a 40-yard dash in 4.4 seconds.
I actually could believe Daryl Green ran
4.43.
Okay, 4.43. That's fast. I don't believe 4.35. I don't think Herschel was as fast as Daryl Green. And even if he can run just that fast, I don't think his body can hold up at the age. I mean, we're talking about a silly story here, but Dan Quinn gave it legs by suggesting that the Atlanta Falcons have a spot for Herschel Walker.
We'd love the competition. Okay. Well, who's right. not going to get the opportunity to compete so that you can bring in a 53-year-old running back?
Not saying a whole lot for Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman right now up there in Atlanta if they're seriously.
Can you imagine being the 90th guy on the roster? Like, you're the guy who gets cut?
Right. To bring him in. Now, look, if you want to give it'd be great. It would be great publicity. You want to bring in Herschel Walker for a tryout and put him in seat. You know, they bring in guys all the time for tryouts, and sometimes they sign them, and like you said, they got to cut somebody off the 90-man roster. Doesn't have to get to that point. Bring in Herschel, okay, you work out. Herschel will be in touch. Don't call us, we'll call you. Here's the problem, Tony. What if he does go out and run 4.41? Then what's your excuse for not signing him, right, after putting him through a workout? This guy ran 4.41. Herschel's a small guy, though, man. I mean, you know, for a guy who ran people over in college, you see him in person. Doesn't he look kind of small? He's fit.
He's really fit.
He's super fit. I mean, there's no question about that. Remember the Sports Illustrated story? I think, was it 1,000 sit-ups and 2,000 push-ups or vice versa that he did every day, he claimed? Never lifted weights, all that stuff. Of course, got into the martial arts, had the whole multiple personality thing happening. Did he want to be an FBI agent at one point?
I believe so, yes.
He and Shaq. Shaq's still a member of the... what is he, a member of the Miami police force, or
Miami PD, yeah.
He was like he really could arrest people.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a badge and everything. He just didn't have to walk the beat as far as that goes. Herschel's not doing anything of the sort. He's not playing another snap of professional football. I don't know if he'd make the Jacksonville Sharks, Tony, quite frankly. But I'd like to see him try. Now, that would be fun. Come play arena ball. And we'll sell the place out to go see Herschel. We'll have Herschel Walker night with the Jacksonville Sharks.
That would be fun.
It'd be an insult to all those fine Jacksonville Sharks out there who are grinding away for the big money that they make in the Arena Football League. Tomorrow is Poker Face Casino Night at PRI Productions, and this is being put on by the Leon Washington Foundation. And the Leon Washington Foundation, like a lot of organizations, does a lot to assist low-income families, but Leon's foundation assists low-income Jacksonville families, right here in Duval County with education, sports, and life skills. And Leon is trying to raise some money through his Poker Face Casino Night, which again takes place at PRI Productions. And tickets are still available to it. $50, but you get to mingle with a lot of current and former NFL players. And gaming, they say, is for entertainment purposes only. But if you want a fun night out to help raise money and rub some elbows with some past and present stars of the National Football League, it's an opportunity to do that. Leon's going to join us in studio coming up in about 10 minutes to talk more about that. But tickets are $50 a person. But I got a pair of them right now, which even with my rudimentary skills, I can figure out that's a $100 value to you. If you'd like to go, if you've got the time to go, check out Poker Night tomorrow night, Poker Face Casino Night with the Leon Washington Foundation. Be the third caller right now at 641-1010, and we'll hook you up with a pair of ducats to go see that. It's at 1819 Kings Avenue right here in Jacksonville. Just call Tyler at 641-1010. We'll take caller three right now for a pair of tickets to that, and we'll have more tickets throughout the course of the rest of the show today as well. Leon Washington going to join us in studio, of course, a star at Andrew Jackson High School. And then moving on to Florida State University, where he played right here in the Gator Bowl and had a starring turn there in Bobby Bowden's last game. And then moving on to the New York Jets, Seattle, New England, and most recently the Tennessee Titans in the National Football League, where he is tied with Josh Cribbs as the all-time leader in kickoff return touchdowns in the National Football League. He'll join us in studio coming up here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And Washington will return this one from the one. Washington slowed down as he crossed the 20 and stays on his feet. Leon Washington is off to the races once again. Does he have the closing speed? Washington is gone. Touchdown, 99 yards, his second of the day. Leon Washington may single-handedly bring the Seahawks a victory.
Leon Washington, he brought a lot of them back to the house, Tony.
He did.
As prolific as anybody when it came to kick return touchdowns in the National Football League. I don't mean that in the past tense, I hope. Can we get him one more? Can we get him the opportunity to get at least one more kickoff return touchdown? Always one of my favorite guys ever since I met him back in his senior year in high school, and hasn't changed a bit as a person. You know, I mean, he was a respectful, just a nice kid, yes sir, no sir, and did all the right things, and has never done anything to make anybody associated with him, his family, Andrew Jackson High School, Florida State University, or anybody, you know, not feel ultra proud of what he's accomplished as a player and a guy. And here he is with us in studio once again, Leon Washington. What's up?
Mike, Tony, thanks for having me, man. Good to be in Jacksonville. You know, I love my city, and I love representing my city the right way. So I always took pride in that and remaining to have high character and show that all in all phases of life. So that's kind of my foundation.
Well, we're going to talk about your specific foundation a lot. You got a lot going on this weekend. We want to talk football with you as well, man. It's good to see you. As I saw you walk in just a moment ago, you look like you're ready to go right now. You look like you're in good shape.
Yep.
The dream is still there. The career is still in your mind, still ongoing and active, and you're waiting for that next call, right?
Yeah, I'm a young 32. You know, I tell my boys all the time, I don't think they ever beat me in running. And then my boys are 9, 6, and 4. So I take care of myself throughout my career, kept myself in shape. So I definitely look forward this year to an opportunity to get to play my 10th year in the National Football League.
The key to that is stop racing them when they get to be about 16 years old.
That's right.
I can beat my kid right now at 46. He's 10, all right? But when he gets about 15, I think he'll be lapping me at that point in time, man. So 9 years in the NFL. You feel good? I mean, you obviously you look like you're in great shape, but you feel as fast as what you've ever been or close to what you need to be?
You know, I'm not Herschel Walker. I'm not going to go out here and say I'm running a 4.35. You know what I mean? But, you know, speed is kind of thing I manage to take care of myself throughout my career and just maintain and take care of my body. The main thing I've been using as an advantage for myself is being a smart player. I think, you know, throughout my career, especially after I broke my leg, it was an opportunity for me to kind of transform my career. So going to that part of coaches can trust me on the football field on third down. They can trust me handling the kick. And they can trust me to put my team in the best position to win football games. So you've seen that throughout my career. So I think, you know, combined with the smarts and combined with, you know, still having the legs to run a little bit kind of give me an advantage.
I know we played, you heard the clip coming in. You said it gave you chills sitting here listening to it as the kick return for Seattle a handful of years ago. Look, going back to 15, 16-year-old Leon, Yeah. You know, you've played nine years in the NFL now. You got 8 kick return touchdowns. You've been a productive player in those 9 years in the league. Does 15, 16-year-old Leon believe the kind of life and career you've had, man?
Ooh, man, you know what? Especially, man, I can believe it now. But, you know, back then I couldn't see it, especially coming from where I'm from. You know, you guys know I'm from right here. Half a mile from down the road, the Stedman, east side of Jacksonville. So coming from that aspect, I couldn't see it, you know. But now, seeing all the hard work I put in throughout the way, the people that helped me along the way, so many people, Hall of Fame coaches, Coach Kelvin Sullivan, John Mike, Miss Simon, but just to name some of the few. But I can believe it now. So that's my main mission, try to spread that story throughout the kids in this community, let them know, like, hey, even though you might go through adversity throughout the way, but you definitely have opportunity to be successful in life, whether it's football or wherever it may be. But on the football standpoint, I worked hard. You know, when I was in high school, Coach Sullivan, you know, he knew my work ethic. When I got to college, it was the same type of thing. In the NFL, it's been the same thing. So I can believe it.
Yeah, I mean, you in high school just did everything, man.
Everything,
you
yeah.
You played both sides of the football special teams, and it seemed like there was a stretch every time you got your hands on the ball, yeah. You were going for 6. You and Seattrick Faison had
yeah,
a great
let's talk
you know,
about that, huh?
Inter-city rivalry. I mean, it was I thought it was a lot of fun, man. And, you know, obviously you go to rival schools. You win Mr. Football. You had a fantastic career at Florida State. And did your college career live up to everything you wanted? Because, you know, I think a lot of people around here always felt like, boy, we thought you'd go in there as the next Warrick Dunn, kind of, and be the focal point of the running game. And you were at times, but it seemed like there was a lot more they could have pulled out of you.
Well, I mean, as a team and as a whole entire, you know, university through the years, there's a lot more we could have got out as a whole. I think that, in my opinion, we underachieve as players, as coaches, and as staff. We underachieve. You know, if you think about me coming out my senior year, I think we had 9 guys drafted, but we lost 5 games.
Right.
My senior
year.
How
does that happen?
Yeah, how does that happen? So, a lot had to do with me, you know, as a player. Some of the things that I was learning throughout my process as a college football player, I could have been a lot better. But I think as players, as coaches, as a staff, I think we totally underachieved during that era at Florida State.
I did, and not to put you in a bad spot here, but, you know, Bobby Bowden was winding down his career at that point in time. Did you see, you know, that kind of, was Bobby, did he become more hands-off kind of as the years went on in Tallahassee?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say hands-off. You know, I would definitely say, you know, he had more, you know, pieces in place to actually have him, you know, to have his job done the way it needed to be done.
To delegate.
I mean, you got Mickey Andrews, you got Billy Sexton, you got Jeff Bowden, you got, you know, people that he knows, people that he trusts to, you know, same thing with Joe Paterno when the guy's up in Penn State. So, you know, coaches get up in age, that's what they do because they built the foundation. But at the same time, it's a transition period, and I just happen to be one of the players a part of that.
You were 1 year too early getting out of Seattle.
Yeah, I know, just, right?
Just, oh, my God.
Oh, man, right?
1 year too early getting out of Seattle before they won that championship. Do you still hate the Atlanta Falcons and Matt Ryan after that comeback?
Oh, man. Oh, man. That was tough, man, because we already beat San Fran that last game of the season that year. We blew them out. So I'm thinking, like, man, get past Atlanta, play San Fran, we're going to Super Bowl. But, you know, Matt Ryan came back. But Russell Wilson, you've seen that, you know, his rookie year. He won that game with 35 seconds left. And then they came down and we got beat on a, you know, on a cover 3 route. We got beat on the zone route. So, but, you know, that's how it goes in the NFL. It's one play, right?
They could have won the Super Bowl the next year, the way the game played out. They could, without Russell Wilson, any one player, they could have taken Richard Sherman out. Wouldn't have mattered. Did you watch that game and say, Percy, that's my kickoff return touchdown? Man, are you kidding me? Second half kickoff. He ran right towards me in the end zone.
You know, as I got the most kickoff returns in NFL history, you know what I'm saying? So I know how to return kicks. So, you know, once I see him, when that ball hit the ground, I knew what the coverage team was going to do. They're going to stop. You know what I mean?
Isn't that funny?
It's funny. Once the ball hit the ground, all the guys are like, you know, what are we going to do now? So Percy's the guy who has great ball skills. And if you got great ball skills, you can make that play with his type of ability.
Was it bittersweet for you? Part of you is happy for your teammates.
Bittersweet is the right word because, I mean, I know Red Bryant. I know Marshawn Lynch. I know, you know, Russell Wilson. I know all those guys over there, Richard Sherman. We all grew up together. So I was happy for those guys. And especially Pete Carroll, man. You see his philosophy go from college, from USC, you know, and back to the NFL. He did a tremendous job with that philosophy, and it's working.
We got Leon Washington here with us. We got Poker Face Casino Night tomorrow night. We're going to give you a chance to get some tickets here coming up momentarily. But you're going to be at the Chick-fil-A. Let me get the locale here. River City Marketplace this afternoon from 5 to 7 o'clock. Just hanging out, chatting with fans, signing autographs, doing whatever.
Yeah, just hanging out, chat with fans. We might got some youth football league teams coming up there. Just basically spreading the word, man. Getting the kids the opportunity to see it real time. And, you know, and so this is one of the things that we're doing in this community. I think it needs it here in Jacksonville. I know you guys have been seeing the violence, especially with guns around here lately. This year in this community. So it's something that we need to start doing, man. Reach more out to the kids and let them know, you know, you don't have to resort to that type of behavior, man. You need to do things more positive.
You know, I heard Cliff Averill on with Frank Frangie and the gang yesterday, and he was talking about what it means to him to be able to go back and say, I sat in the same classroom as you. I went through this. I played in these same neighborhoods, these same parks, and I did it the right way, and you can do it as well. How satisfying is it for you to be able to spread that message?
It's very satisfying, but I'm not too content. You know, I want to keep moving forward. Football is only a chapter of my life. So, but if I can keep spreading the word and if we can keep doing it collectively, I'm with everyone doing it collectively, we can be, you know, we could be a better place. I think everybody could be in a better place. So, and that's the thing these young kids has to know. I mean, you see young kids out here, 13 years old, 14 years old. I mean, even younger than that, making major mistakes, you have to think, you know, where was the foundation laid at some point? So when I meet young kids, I let them know, like, look, everybody goes through adversity. Everybody's going to go through some tough times at that point in their life. How do you want to get through it?
All right. Our question of the day today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is in honor of Leon Washington. That's where my vote goes. Who's your favorite Jacksonville-born athlete of all time? It doesn't have to have played for the Jags. Who would that happen to be? And whether it's Leon or anybody else, you can share your thoughts on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. You're at Leon_Washington, right?
Yeah, at Leon_Washington.
Are you big on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm big on Twitter. I'm big on all the social media. Yeah, Leon Washington 33 on Instagram and Leon Washington on Facebook. You can follow me there. And then for our events coming up this weekend, LeonWashington33.org.
There you go. We'll talk more about those events coming up this weekend. We got Leon in for the rest of the show with us in studio. As a matter of fact, we got a pair of tickets right now to the Poker Face Casino Night at PRI Productions tomorrow from 7 to 11. Leon was telling us a moment ago, and we'll get into more details when we come back about it. It's going to be red carpet, going to be a lot of guys. You named a bunch of current Jags, as a matter of fact, and former players from the National Football League that'll be on hand. Chance for folks to rub elbows. $50 a ticket, and it all goes to benefit the Leon Washington Foundation. We got a pair of free ducats for you right now if you call Tyler at 641-1010. We'll take caller number 4 at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We got Leon Washington in studio, back with more on Jaguars Today in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today continues here live from Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. I think the voice is getting stronger as I go, Tony. Maybe I just need to use it more.
Maybe.
I never have had a problem with using it that much, have I? Love to talk.
No.
Love to talk. Love to talk with Leon Washington, our guest in studio here, one of Jacksonville's favorite sons. Leon, what did it mean for you to come back here, and maybe you didn't win as many games overall as you wanted to in your college career, but be able to play in the Gator Bowl in your hometown, not just play, but win MVP, star, put up near record numbers. What was that experience like for you?
It was awesome. I mean, I don't think many people know how close I grew up from this stadium. I mean, like, all of my family houses were right there where the new Coliseum were built.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so coming here as a kid, I was working as a teenager selling Coca-Colas and watching the game, walking up and down the stadium thinking, like, one day I'm going to play in there. So when I got the opportunity to play there in college, it was awesome. All my family and some friends there, we practiced at JU all that week, and I just felt like I was going to do something special that day. So to win the MVP in the Gator Bowl right here in my hometown has been awesome. And then whenever I come here and play in Jacksonville, we might not win the game, but I always, you know, have a good game against the Jaguars or playing on this field.
How many tickets are you laying out for when you play in Jacksonville?
Oh, yeah. Days? I mean, it's,
forget it.
Yeah, it's 50 to 70. It's 50 to 70 every single time, so which is, you know, it's worth it.
Well worth it, I would think. Man. I mean, not many folks get that opportunity to do what you've been able to do. Leon Washington here with us. I want to get into, you know, we talked a little bit about, you said we saw Russell Wilson that rookie year, what he was able to do there in Seattle. You look at the situation he's in now. Could have taken you guys to the Super Bowl that first year. Obviously did the next two seasons in Seattle. Won one, could have won two. Are you surprised at what's going on with the contract situation up there? That look, it's a business. We all hear that all the time from you guys. But, you know, I don't know what much more he can prove on the field in his first 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that, you know, the way the new collective bargaining agreement is set, You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things that all the quarterbacks are getting most of the money, you know, getting all the cap hits. So, and Russell Wilson in the position where he negotiated to where, like, look at my resume. Okay, Joe Flacco went to the playoffs, you know, the first five seasons. Yes, he did, but I went every season and went to two Super Bowls and won one. So it's one of those things that I think his contract is going to be done specially. I don't think he'll, in my opinion, he'll see the most guaranteed money, the most signing bonus we've ever seen in a contract in order for the Seattle Seahawks to keep their team intact.
You think he will ultimately get that?
I think he'll be the highest paid player, yeah.
And then I think ultimately Andrew Luck, it depends on the time. It kind of depends on the order with all these guys.
Guys, exactly. And then with Andrew Luck, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the highest efficient quarterback we've seen, you know, in a long time since Peyton Manning. This guy can affect the game in so many different ways. He's extremely accurate with the ball. He puts the team in the right place. So, and he was the number one drafted player overall. So he has tremendous value right there. So it's going to come one of those things to where I know Andrew Luck is looking at Russell Wilson like, man, get paid.
Get it done soon. Paid, I don't want to go first. Nobody wants to go first anymore.
And then if Andrew Luck goes to the Super Bowl next year, or, you know, it gets closer there, then he's going to have a leverage, you know, that's, it's unbelievable.
And that's kind of the thing, right? People look at Luck and they say, well, he's lifting probably a less talented group up to where he's had them. They've won 11 games every year that he's been there. He hasn't been to the Super Bowl, certainly then hasn't won a Super Bowl. And I think, you know, part of the argument is, right or wrong, that a lot of quarterbacks could succeed in Seattle because of the great defense and the great running game that's in place. But you know, as a guy who was just a teammate of Russell Wilson's for a year, is that underselling what he does on the football field?
It's very underselling. Let me tell you. Okay, so I played with Brett Favre when I was with the New York Jets. I played with Tom Brady, 10 games in New England, and I played with Russell Wilson. And he has the common denominator of all those guys. He's an extremely competitor and an extreme preparation and player. I mean, like, this guy's from the day one he got there. And Matt Flynn, I think, got paid like $10 million from Seattle, and he got there, and they drafted Russell Wilson, and he took the job off a guy that just got paid $10 million. The guy's a tremendous leadership skill, and I'm telling you, this guy is Frank Tarkenton with the ball. I mean, this guy can extend the play. He can extend the pocket. He can manipulate the pocket. This guy actually moved the pocket from the middle of the field all the way to the side of the field. And he understands that he rarely gets hit. He gets down, and he makes tremendous plays on third down. So, in my opinion, if I had to take top three quarterback, it would be Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and probably, you know, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck.
There you go. That's pretty heady company for Russell Wilson. He does have that uncanny knack of never getting hit. He never takes a shot.
He never takes a shot.
Much as he runs, he's just got that thing where the guys can't square him up.
And he is explosive. Let me tell you, he is explosive. We ran drills in the offseason. We were sprinting drills. And let me tell you, if I don't run full speed, he'll beat me. If you ask any defender who tries to catch him, like, he explodes away from guys.
Yeah, well, not a lot of guys are going to admit that the QB is going to run him down, Tony.
Speaking of defense in Seattle, I want to get to it. Gus Bradley's obviously here in Jacksonville. You had some time with him up there in Seattle, too. But the swagger of that Seattle team, a lot of it comes from that defense and the Legion of Boom. And Richard Sherman, now, understanding that if you say anything too negative, it'll probably get to him, and he'll let you know about it here in Jacksonville. But just going up against those guys in practice every day.
I mean, you know, when we first got there, me, myself, Mike Robinson, Red Bryant, some of the guys that were there when they first got drafted into that place, you know, we were some of the guys that kind of set the tempo. I remember Earl Thomas coming up to me and saying, like, man, you know, how you practicing so hard? You're taking every kickoff return full speed to the end zone. I'm telling them, like, hey, man, this is what it takes. Because those guys already had the hunger, and they pretty much already had the work ethic. So, and you can see the philosophy with Pete Carroll, you know, bringing in guys that got something to prove. Marshawn Lynch, Richard Sherman getting drafted in the fifth round. And those guys' swagger on the West Coast is just different. I know we're on the East Coast. We kind of, you know, we kind of do our thing in a more respectful way. But those guys on the West Coast, and they believe what they do, and they're going to talk about it.
Oh, will they now? We haven't noticed that going on out there. As Tony mentioned, Gus Bradley was there. He didn't coach you directly. He was, you know, orchestrating the defense out there. But what's your impression of Gus? And did you have a feeling in your time in Seattle when you got to be around him that this guy had the look of a future head coach?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, I remember all the practices where we were warming up in the beginning of practices. Gus Bradley walked by each player on the whole entire practice like he was the head coach already, dapping each guy up. I mean, just the energy that he brought to the defense, the energy that he brought to, I mean, the whole entire building where it was in Seattle, you just knew it was coming. I mean, and you can see it here also. I mean, guys are, you know, I'm talking to my friends right here in Jacksonville. I talked to them, some of the players on the team. They really feel like they're around the brink, you know, of turning this thing over. So I hope, you know, Gus continue to do well. You know, football has a lot of factors in it, but I think they're around the brink because they got talented players on this roster.
We hope that's the case. Yeah. Right, Tony?
We certainly do. You've been in Tennessee for the last year and a half, obviously a division
Boo!
Rival. Right. I did go back and look. You had the 7 catches for 60 yards and a touchdown here on Thursday night last year against the Jacksonville Jaguars. But just talk a little bit about your experience up there with Tennessee, as it is, again, a division rival of this Jacksonville Jaguars team, and where you feel like that organization is right now in their own little rebuild that they're dealing with.
Yeah, it's kind of similar. I kind of put Tennessee, Jacksonville, Carolina Panthers kind of in that same category, you know, the one that's kind of started, with, especially with the Titans coming from the Oilers to the Titans. The Panthers are kind of stabilized. They got a quarterback over there, so you kind of see those guys been in the playoffs each and every year. Tennessee is one of those, you know, organizations kind of, you know, fell off for a little bit after Jeff Fisher left. You know, the inconsistency at the head coaching position can be a factor. And so they're trying to get stabilized there with Ken Whisenhunt. But in Jacksonville, in the same aspect, I mean, you look at the coaching situation's kind of been up and down, you know, over the last 10 years. So ever since Tom Coughlin left, so they're trying to get stable here. So those guys are trying to chase the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, you know, if you look at this division, the most stable quarterback in this division is in the Colts. And then secondly, it seems to be in the Jacksonville Jaguars with the Houston Texans and the Tennessee Titans don't really know who the starting quarterback is going
to
be.
He only played 1 year, so you didn't get to see him. And you're worried about your own team at the time. But what impressions do you have of Blake Bortles?
BB, I mean, my impressions of him, you watched him when he came out of college. You seen him, you know, like everybody see right here in Jacksonville, he's a gamer. He's a gamer. But, I mean, a lot of coaches, you know, really appreciate practice, I tell you that.
Right.
They want to see it look good in practice. So I think for him, from what I hear, he has a tremendous work ethic to get better. And that's what you want to see. You don't want to see a quarterback feels like, okay, I'm just going to be a gamer. I don't care what you say. He has a tremendous ethic to get better. So like anything, like any other quarterback in the league, that left tackle, the right tackle, and them both guards better protect them. If they protect them, give them opportunity to get past his second, third progression, I think he'd be pretty good.
You know, I just up in New York around a lot of media from around the country, and they asked me about the team, obviously. Yeah, those are some of the things I mentioned. One, the offensive line is going to be a lot better, we hope. At least on paper, it looks like it'll be a lot better. And I think a lot of casual fans, certainly around the country, they don't follow the Jags as closely, and they certainly don't know about the offensive line. Guys look at skill position, guys. It's very easy to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing you said about Blake with the work ethic, I tell people, they ask me, how good is he going to be? I say, he's going to be as good as he's capable of being, because that's the kind of worker he is.
Yep.
Right? So
yep.
Whatever his potential is, he'll hit his potential. It won't be for lack of effort.
And exactly.
Like you said, though, you kind of alluded to, he's not a practice guy. He's not always going to look, he's not always going to hit 99 out of 100 in practice.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And I'd rather have a gamer than that practice hero, but it'd be nice to have it both. And some coaches,
it's encouraging to see those guys the last, four or five games of the season. You start to see some of the progression in this play. So you've seen the thing when they beat us that Thursday night game here in Jacksonville. So, he's going there. He's getting there. And they're trying to put some pieces around him, obviously, with T.J. Yeldon coming in with the running game and some of the wide receivers they're adding, they're talking about. So for Gus, it's going to be the defense. You know, defense control the tempo of the game. You know, having Blake coming in, you know, trying to manage the game. Because in the way this game is played this year in this league, man, the skill position guys out in the flat, they're protected. So if you could just get an opportunity to get those guys the ball because of the way the game has been played, I mean, you can be good.
Are you happy with the way the game's played now? I mean, are you one of these guys that says it's getting too soft, or do you understand the reasoning behind some of the rule changes and enforcement that we've seen?
Yeah, I'm happy where it's going, but here's the reason why. Because
you're 32, man.
Yeah.
You don't get hit that hard. No,
yeah. I mean, you know, I came in 2006, so I kind of came in an era where when we start working out and we start preparing for the game, we're being taught more how to deliver our energy. So I think, you know, back in the day, guys, you know, Jim Brown went out there, he hammered you, and he really didn't understand how he was doing it. I think guys understand now, you know, if you use your hips and you deal with the punch the right way, it can be as devastating as if you're doing it with your head down. I mean, if a guy like Cam Chancellor hits Vernon Davis across the middle with his head up and step it punching into him, that hurts a lot more than you running with your head down. So I think the game is going, you know, a lot better.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of guys, you still hear a lot of guys saying, man, they're just, you know, they're, it's not football anymore. We don't recognize the game.
Man, the hit's a lot harder. I'm telling you. The hit's a lot harder. It's just like a boxer. When the boxer is stepping into a punch and he has his leverage the right way, he will knock you out. And if his head is up and he will knock you out.
You know what? The NFL should put you out there as a spokesman, because I honestly think you're the first guy I've heard say that.
I'm telling you, it's the absolute truth. I mean, if you think about any other sports that you play, the dynamics of hitting somebody is keeping your feet in the ground. And that's when they say, if you put your head down, you lose your power. You're going to get hurt. If you keep your feet in the ground and you keep your head up, it hurt.
All right. Give me the details here. And we're going to bring you back for another segment here, but give me the details for the folks out there. You told us off the air about Poker Face Casino, and I give us some of the names of some of the guys if you want to come out and hang out with the Leon Washington Foundation tomorrow night. What kind of folks are we talking about seeing out there?
Well, so myself out there, Red Bryant, Telvin Smith, Tony Carter, Charles James, Jacoby McDaniel, and et cetera. A lot of other Jacksonville guys.
Scobie's going to be there, you said?
Yeah, Scobie's going to be at the football camp.
Oh, at the football camp Saturday. Okay.
Saturday camp at Andrew Jackson High School football camp. And then there's a bunch of guys in Jacksonville. Cliff Averill, Sederic, you know, here with the Jaguar. He's going to be over. So there's going to be a bunch of guys coming out supporting each other. Me and Cliff Averill have our weekend going at the same time this weekend, so we're going to be helping each other
out. That's a pretty cool deal he's doing as well the, you know, kind of like a family day kind of deal. We're going to talk about your football camp. Is it still open, by the way? Folks, do they need to register ahead of time? Do they need to do anything?
Yeah, man, unfortunately, the registry is closed. Okay. We got, you know, we are expecting a lot of kids this year, which we have each and every year. So, but if you want to come out there, get there at 7 o'clock in the morning. Camp starts at 8. And then we'll allow a certain amount of walk-ups to come up. But you know what I mean? I love the kids. So I don't want to turn away any kids.
Turn too many away,
yeah,
right?
we're going to make it happen.
All right. Well, Leon Washington, by the way, that's at Andrew Jackson High School from 8 a.m. until noon this Saturday. It's free. Free youth football clinic with a lot of other players on hand helping him out as well. Get more details at leonwashington33.org. But as Leon said, don't show up at, you know, 8:01. Get there at 7 o'clock if you're not registered, and my man will help you out, but you got to help him out a little bit too.
Exactly. And I just want to give a special thanks to all my sponsors. This is our third year doing that foundation weekend, and we get tons of support from people in Jacksonville. Starting off with Alan Worley with Money Pages. Every year they support us fully. PRI, Randy Goodwin and PRI Productions. They do some of the best things here in Jacksonville, and they always support the Jacksonville Jaguars. Chuck out of River City Marketplace, Chick-fil-A, supporting us every year. And also Tim Tebow Foundation, they have supported us in the past. So, and all the people who are out there in our community, all our volunteers, who help us each and every year, I really appreciate your support because we're doing it for the kids.
I tell you what, Tony, we do how many of these interviews every year at the Super Bowl? We've been doing them for 10 years.
Yeah.
And everybody's got a handle. Everybody's got a list. Leon's just like ripping it right off the top of his head. He knows who to thank. He's done this a few times before.
No doubt.
All right. So, Poker Face Casino Night at PRI Productions tomorrow night. Got another pair of tickets for you right now if you want them at 641-1010. We'll take caller 3 in honor of 33. We'll take caller number 3 and we'll hook you up. We've already had a couple of winners and we've got another pair to go. So if you'd like to go and hang out with the likes of Leon Washington and Telvin Smith and Red Bryant and others, go check it out by picking up the phone right now, 641-1010. And if you don't win the tickets, go to leonwashington33.org for information about everything he's got going on, including today at Chick-fil-A in the River City Marketplace from 5 to 7 o'clock, a little free meet and greet, rub elbows, get an autograph, take a picture, hang out, talk football. Should be a pretty cool endeavor. We'll put the screws to him, Tony, on Deflategate coming up next. He thought he'd escape, but he's not going to escape without talking about those softballs they got up there in Foxborough. So we'll get to that coming your way. We'll also take a look at the fan feedback spotlight asking you today, brought to you by the Todd Bush family of dealerships. We love our sponsors too. Who's your favorite Jacksonville-born athlete? Mine's sitting in the room with me right now. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Leon Washington here with you. It's Jaguars Today live from Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, one more chance before we get out of here today on Jaguars Today to score yourself a pair of tickets to Poker Face Casino Night with the Leon Washington Foundation. That's coming up in a few minutes, so stick around for that. By the way, you should be happy to know the interest has been hot and heavy, according to Tyler. People want to show up, nice. And you can get info on that. Can you get info on that as well as the camp if you go to leonwashington33.org?
Yes, you go right to my website, leonwashington33.org. I appreciate all the support. Guys, trust me, come out. It's a great event. Everybody, you know, really does a great job of, you know, having fun and really trying to give back to the community.
Should be great, man. Your foundation, like a lot of guys, by the way, a lot of guys do this, but it's nice to see you continue to do it in your hometown. The Leon Washington Foundation mission statement, it's to assist low-income Jacksonville families with education, sports, and life skills, and, you know, stuff that, your experiences, are paying off now for the next generation of kids and showing them you can do things the right way and still be a great success, not only in football, but more importantly in life. So, you know, you've been a good example for kids out there. And what is it like? He came in here. We've got all these old media guys in here. We went right to Tony, to the 2007 Jets media guy.
Yeah, I don't think we have anything like newer than 2009.
I know, they're old ones because everything's digital now, Leon. But we've got all the books in here, man. What's it like to flip through and see all these guys you used to play with back in the day?
You know, here's where the real football players were before all these new rules came in and all that. You know, so, it's funny looking at some of the guys. Like I see Ray Patron, and he was like Vince Papale. You know, in our team on special teams. And so looking back and seeing a lot of these guys that you build a camaraderie with throughout the time, a lot of these guys are not even in the league anymore. So it makes you appreciate, you know, getting a chance to play 9 years in the league.
And hopefully 10 and who knows how many after that. So Leon Washington is available, coaches.
That's right.
Give him a look. I know you've had some looks. We're not going to get into specifics right now. We'll keep that close to the vest. But
whatever happens this year, Leon, 9 years is a hell of a career.
Hell of a career.
We're going to get 10, though.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah. We're going to get 10.
All right. He's a confident guy, and you don't get to be where he's at without being a confident guy. All right, let's get to your time in New England. First of all, before we get to the whole Deflategate, what's it like to play for Belichick?
It's interesting, but, you know, and for me, it's in a good way, and that's how I see it. I was with Eric Mangini, my first coach with the New York Jets, and he came from the Bill Belichick school of you know, when that philosophy of work hard, you know, you lay on everything on the line for your teammates. So when I got there, I understood it. So, and it's a beautiful philosophy. I think you look at Pete Carroll, you look at Bill Belichick, the total opposite extremes in philosophy. You know, Pete Carroll likes to do it, you know, having fun and being who you are. And Belichick likes to have it, do it his way and hard-nosed, tough football team. So it was great playing for coach. I learned a lot. And I'm going to definitely, you know, when I become a coach, I'm going to, you know, kind of adopt both of those philosophies.
You are. So what level were we talking about? You want to be an NFL coach? You want to be a high school coach giving back? Where do you see yourself eventually?
Well, ultimate the NFL, you know, ultimate NFL. But getting an opportunity to whatever main level it may start at, whether it's college. I can see myself being an excellent recruiter. When I was at Florida State, I brought in all 5-star recruits. I'm from Jacksonville, one of the hotbeds in the country for football. So I could definitely see, you know, you can put the plan in place to make it happen.
You're listening, Jimbo?
Yeah, right. Well, look, Tony, it's so important to have that guy, those guys
absolutely
that are on your roster that play that game, because you guys all now, with all the All-Star games and all the camps, y'all, not all of you, but a lot of you know each other now. You have those connections, and now even more so with social media. So many guys are connected. To have one or two key guys either in a recruiting class or already on campus spreading the gospel for the team is important.
Yeah, it's very important. So, you know, as a coach, when you're recruiting the players and you get like a big time 5-star athlete like a Jameis Winston, you know, you take pride in the character that he can really influence the other teammates on his team. Because when a guy comes in his visit and he meets Jameis Winston and he's cool and he's relaxed, he's like, okay, I want to come to Florida State. This guy's not uptight. This guy's, you know, he's a really good guy. So it takes a lot of that, you know, when it comes down to recruiting players.
What do you think about Jameis? I mean, I assume you know him a little bit, and you know, some people think he's the devil incarnate. Other people think he's, you know, gotten a bad rap, and maybe it's somewhere in between. What is your personal opinion of him? Obviously, as a player, but as a guy as well.
First of all, as a guy, you know, I met him several times. The first time I met him, and I was like, "Hey, Jameis Winston, Leon Washington." He was like, "Man, I know you, throwback Leon Washington, number 3. So, you know, the guy character is awesome. And then you look at his family, his mom and dad's raised him, you know, the right way. He made mistakes, and he admitted that the first thing. He made mistakes, but, you know, what you see what he has done ever since the public incident with the crab legs, what he's done since then, how he's carried himself throughout the draft process, everything has been doing the right way. So I think he's actually learned from it as a football player on the field. You know, for my evaluation, and I really look at players as an evaluator, you know, this is one of the best prospects we ever seen come out. You know, when he went to the combine, he did the Wonderlic. He killed that. You know, the guy was writing up cover 2, cover 3, cover 4, schemes when he was 10 years old. So, and he can spin that football. So I'm, you know, If you don't get a Jacksonville Jaguars season tickets, then maybe you want to drive down the 3 hours, you know, check those guys
hey,
out.
Hey, you know what? The Bold City Brigade's taking about $2,000 yes, worth of fans down there week five, Jameis. It's going to be a world of hurt is what's coming in week five. All right, let's get to this Deflategate thing. You're a teammate of Tom Brady's for a period in your career. What are your thoughts? I don't need, you know all the details as far as we know. What are your thoughts on where things stand?
Well, the details are the details. I think that, you know, I haven't handled the football enough to understand, you know, what goes into that. I do know I handle the ball as a kicker, so I know how the kickballs are. So when I know when I catch the kickballs that the kicker use, they're usually a little bit more inflated because they want the ball to go further. So I understand that, but I do understand that when you're playing in different weather, what can happen to the football? So when you're playing in cold weather, the ball doesn't travel as far. I mean, you could think the ball's going to go far, but the ball doesn't travel as far because it does tend to deflate. But that's specifics. But outside of that, Tom Brady is an awesome guy. Tremendous work ethic. I mean, I remember being there, getting there 6 o'clock in the morning. He's one of the first guys in the building. And I'm like, this guy's already got 15 years in the league and 3 Super Bowls. You know what I mean? So there's no contentment on his part. So as a player, how I view it, those Super Bowl championships and those wins are, that's what they deserve. I don't think that has anything to do with the play on the football field.
All right, there you go. Leon Washington, you know, some players feel that way. Other players feel that it's a kind of a big deal or somewhere in between. And, you know, you get the full spectrum of opinions on that. Certainly, Leon Washington here with us. Tony, let's take a look while we got a moment at the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, where we ask folks today, who's your favorite Jacksonville-born athlete of all time? What kind of feedback we get on that?
We got all kinds of different names here. From Alex, we got Harold Carmichael. From Eric, mine is Rasheen Mathis. Went to high school together, and he was a good player. Great in the city. He was better than good. Rasheen was really, really good for this franchise for a long time. From Irish Jaguar, he said, ooh, Billy Butler. Irish Jag didn't know what to do with this question.
Ooh, that's a good one, yeah, Billy Butler.
Because
yeah,
he lives over there across the pond. He just happens to be a Jaguars fan, and his favorite major league team is the Athletics. So he found out Billy was from here, and he was all kinds of excited. From Demetrius, Brian Dawkins, quietly one of the best safeties of all time and future Hall of Famer. And from Black Dog, the only man to win an Olympic gold medal and the Super Bowl ring, Bullet Bob Hayes. Yeah, #get, fastest man alive.
Get a lot of Bob Hayes, understandable. I mean, he's arguably the greatest athlete, mm-hmm, present company excluded, in Jacksonville history. But on Facebook, got a lot of the same. Rasheen, Leon, Bob Hayes, Leroy Butler. How about one shout out for D Brown from Justin
Brown,
Waller?
Yep.
Not bad. Could you ever dunk with your eyes covered?
You know, we let the rim down to 7 foot. You know, we were little kids and we did the D Brown, man. We did the D Brown.
We did it too, man. Even when I was tall enough, in the brief window of time when I could dunk, nothing like playing on like an 8.5 foot rim,
yeah, know,
back,
right,
in the day, man. I don't know that. I could just sneak it over the front of the rim, but I wasn't covering my eyes and doing any of that stuff, man. But fun nonetheless.
Yeah, we had a texter just text in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. I talked to you a little bit about this earlier, but you obviously went to Andrew Jackson High School, played for Coach Sullivan over there at that time. Can you just talk a little bit about the impact of Coach Sullivan? He's a Hall of Famer, obviously, here in the state, and what he meant to you and your career going forward.
I mean, I can't be more thankful for, you know, the stars being aligned for me as a kid growing up. You know, my godfather, John Mike, who coached me in Little League football, was also my running back coach at Andrew Jackson High School. So that worked great for me. But when I got to Andrew Jackson High School, I came there as a 10th grader. And so everybody knew for me from Pop Warner football. You know, I played with the Arlington Warriors and a little bit with Forest View. And so I met Coach Sullivan. They're like, you know, they're trying to tell him how good of a football player I am. And I was coming from University of Christian, my ninth grade year. So he would see me in the hallway. And he would be like, Pop Warner legend. That's all. That's PWL. That's all he'll ever be. PWL, Pop Warner legend. So he motivated me my whole entire 10th grade year. And I was like, you know what, Coach? You know, I'm gonna tighten up on these academics. I'm gonna come out there and show you what I can do. So when I came out there, the first time I touched the ball against Orange Park, I went for 99, and he was like, okay. He motivated me. He took care of me. Not only me, my family, my friends, and so many other guys that played at Andrew Jackson High School. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer high school football coach, and can't be more thankful. He's running my football camp Saturday at Andrew Jackson High School, so that goes to show, you know, how much, you know, I love Coach Sullivan. I just appreciate everything about him.
Hey, we appreciate, man, the guy you are, but great career at Andrew Jackson, great career at Florida State, continued great career, hope, in the National Football League. And this is one of the most dangerous return men that have ever laced them up in the NFL. All right, let's run through the whole lineup now. We've got today Chick-fil-A, River City Marketplace from 5 until 7 o'clock. Come on out. Rub some elbows just like we're doing with Leon right now. He's as down-to-earth as you're going to find any guy who's been a decade in the National Football League. Get an autograph. Grab some food, get a picture, whatever the case may be. So do that today from 5 to 7 at Chick-fil-A in the River City Marketplace. Tomorrow is Poker Face Casino Night at PRI Productions. Let me get that address out here real quick. That is 1819 Kings Avenue here in Jacksonville, and that goes from 7 until 11 o'clock. If you'd like to get tickets, you can go to LeonWashington33.org for more information on that, or if you listen in a moment, you'll have an opportunity to score one last pair of tickets. And then, of course, Leon's free youth football clinic at Andrew Jackson High School, as he mentioned. Coach Sullivan helping him run that. That goes from 8 until noon this Saturday at Andrew Jackson. If you're registered, you're all set. If you're not, try to get out there by 7 a.m., and Leon is not a kind of guy who's going to let the kids at Jacksonville down if he can help it. So if you're just hearing about it for the first time, shame on us for not telling you about it sooner. But you can get out there and take part in that to a guy who gives back a lot to the city of Jacksonville. You've given us a lot to cheer for over the years, man, and hopefully you get that opportunity to do it at least one more go-round this year.
Yeah, man, thank you. Thank you for all the support for over the years. I tell you what, the Jacksonville is my heart. That's where I love to be at, and you never know. You never know what can happen. So, but, you know, come join us this weekend. It's going to be awesome this weekend. Mike, Tony, I appreciate it, man.
Hey, anytime, Leon. You know that. You got an open door policy here. You just show up, just knock, and come on in, man. You're good to go as far as we're concerned. All right?
It's cool to be in the Jaguar Stadium other than actually playing here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you get it. It's a little, right. You're not the enemy coming in now. You're behind the scenes. I don't know. Hey, Gus. I don't know if Gus is listening right now. Hey, Gus, if you're still looking for a kickoff returner, I'm just saying, all right? That's me saying. Leon's not making his pitch. His pitch is his body of work over the last 9 seasons in the National Football League. You and Herschel, head-to-head, you say you can't run a 4.35, but we'll take whatever you can run at the age of 32. I have a sneaking feeling it's just as quick as what Herschel's running right now at whatever age.
I probably could, though.
You think you can do what can you run right now?
Right now, I think the other day, me and Cliff Abel was running, I think I ran like a 4.51.
Yeah.
Me and Cliff Abel, we work out together, so I think like a 4.51, something like that.
What do you think you could get it down to if you had?
If I train for it easily, 4.42, 4.43.
You could. Yeah. How much, and we got to get out of here, but how much are some of these 40 times we see at the combine a little suspect just because guys so specifically train to run like a track guy, and you're never going to run like that again.
Exactly, and football is all about burst. It's all about the first 10 yards. So a guy can, you can run a 4.2, but I mean, if you can't get away from a guy when you need to, it doesn't matter.
All right, well, we got to wrap it up. Thanks to the Tom Bush family of dealerships bringing you the Fan Feedback Spotlight today, featuring Leon Washington and a number of other great Jacksonville-born athletes. Leon, have a great time again. Today, Chick-fil-A, River City Marketplace from 5 to 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, go to LeonWashington33.org for more details on the Poker Face Casino Night. And then Saturday, the free youth football clinic at Andrew Jackson High School. Last pair of tickets, by the way, to Poker Face Casino Night. Right now, we'll take caller number 4 at 641-1010. Leon, great to see you, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, bro.
All right, there he goes, Leon Washington.
The Pop Warner legend, out of the studio.
PWL, Pop Warner legend. I think he's overcome. Whatever motivates you, man, they all have something that drives them, and it certainly has worked for Leon for a long, long time. That does it for us. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Wrapping it up, we'll say hello to XL Primetime next, coming up on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.